Hello and welcome once again, everybody. This is the Spitballin' Podcast, a Texas Rangers podcast. I'm Ben Rogers, and I'm joined by my close personal buddy, Jamie Newberg. And let's dive right in. Rangers receive some bad news as Shin-Soo Choo is lost for the season. Jamie, Ryan Rua is going to get the call up. I was sitting there thinking, man, is there any way Gallo gets a piece of this? I'm a big Joey Gallo fan. I'm a fan of the long ball. He looked lost last time he was here, and not necessarily a corner outfielder, but I think the Rangers view him as a guy who could play corner outfield if they needed to. But he's not going to get a shot here. What do you make of where Joey Gallo is with this organization, and then more so, how do you feel about the loss of Shin-Soo Choo?
Well, take him in reverse. Losing Choo is big. Obviously, I mean, he's really the one guy that's cut out for the leadoff spot in terms of, he put his whole game together. You'd like a guy that runs a little bit more than he does batting first. But in terms of working, getting on base, he's been the guy. And unfortunately for him this year, it's been just a lost season. This is his fourth trip to the disabled list in 1 year. And it's real hard to play enough and come back enough to go on to the DL four different times. And you feel terrible for the guy because, after what he'd gone through in the first half, the hope was, all right, he settles back in. He's actually kind of fresh. You've got Beltran now that can take Choo out of the defensive lineup from time to time and take him into the playoffs. And now, that seems unlikely. It seems like he's certainly going to miss the rest of the regular season, and whether he's back to the playoffs or not, no telling. As far as Gallo is concerned, I think the reason that Rua gets the call right now rather than Gallo is just the fit. Right now, you want to have someone with a little bit more defensive versatility so that Beltran isn't necessarily playing defense every day. And Rua gives you that. He can play in the outfield. He can even play a little center field if needed, but he can certainly play the corners, and he gives you some versatility at first base and another righty and a bat to mix in. And here's the other thing. We're in mid-August. A couple weeks from now, Joey Gallo is going to be up, and some others are going to be too. September 1st, the rosters expand, and they're going to bring guys up, not as a reward, but just, adding a couple guys in the mix who can help here and there, whether it's pinch hitting or getting a start or two a week or lengthening the bullpen and so forth. So Gallo is going to be back up, if not before September 1st, then certainly by then.
Well, I hate this loss of Choo. I'm a big Shin-Soo Choo guy, and when he's here and when he's healthy, he's amazing. But they haven't really had him this year, and they didn't really have much of Prince either. And, you look at that, that's over $40 million of payroll that you're missing. And, we're still not really stopping our stride here. I mean, in terms of our outlook or our expectations for the Texas Rangers, it's pretty amazing that you can take over $40 million of payroll off the active roster. Even more if you want to throw in what you've gotten of Derek Holland and Colby Lewis and whatnot. But, it's pretty amazing that this team has the depth to withstand massive losses like that.
Hey, I'd even throw in Josh Hamilton. Even though Texas isn't paying for him, and so we're not looking at it as a payroll hit that's sitting on the disabled list, you take Fielder, Choo, and Hamilton, and that's three left-handed bats that either project a hit in the middle of your order or at the top. Those are three key left-handed bats that this team is without and will be without the remainder of the season. And they have the most wins in the American League as we record this. And it is a testament to the depth. And we had an event this weekend at the ballpark, and one of the questions that John Daniels was asked was about that depth. And he talked about looking at the roster from players 20 through 40, that he thinks this is the deepest that this club has been since he's been here. May not have the MVP candidates at the top like this team has had in the past, but when you get to the bottom of the active roster and then the depth of AAA and AA that's available to come help when needed, whether because of injury or ineffectiveness or whatever, and this team is super deep. We're not seeing a whole lot of guys that have bounced around the minor leagues for 11 years coming up to fill in for 2 weeks. When players are called up, it's typically young guys who've already gotten a taste of the big leagues, or players that, maybe like DeShields, who had taken a little bit of a step backwards, but still have the upside if they can find their rhythm again to be close to an everyday player in the big league. So, yeah, the depth has been huge. You certainly can't replace Fielder, Choo, and Hamilton and just feel like you haven't skipped a beat. But they do have enough in the inventory where they're bringing guys up and are able to sustain, winning baseball despite the losses of guys like that.
So you were the first person, Jamie, that I know of that was talking about the possibilities of Jerkson Profar as a leadoff hitter. You've been talking about that for a long time. And sure enough, he gets up here and has some success hitting leadoff while they were waiting for Chu to get back the last time he was on the DL. And so you would think, okay, Profar, that makes sense to have him be a leadoff hitter against right-handed pitching. He's just not hitting as well against left-handed pitching. But against right-handed pitching, as a lefty, he's been fantastic. Of course, he's a switch hitter. So that said, do you see Profar leading off against righties and somebody else, like, I don't know, Elvis or Delino leading off against lefties?
Profar's at bats haven't been as good the last month or so as they were early on. Not sure if he's hitting a wall. I mean, this guy hasn't played a full season in a very long time. Maybe he refines a groove, but, he may be the best bet, at least from the left side of the plate. And then, yeah, DeShields from the right side, possibly. His at-bats have been a little better than they were early in the year when he got demoted, but still really not what you're looking for out of a leadoff type. Oddly enough, I was thinking about this a lot when Chu went down. I thought, Carlos Beltran would actually be a pretty interesting guy at the top of the order. With his ability to work counts, get on base, but you really don't want to take his bat out of the middle because he's got that extra base production and he's a great guy to have sitting five or six in the lineup. So I doubt they pull him out of that and put him at the top. But if they had enough depth in the middle of the line to do that, Beltran would be pretty interesting. I don't know what his on base is since he's come over here in just a couple weeks, but he's typically 340, 350, and that's a good number. I mean, Chu was up in the 360s, and that's exceptional. But no one else on this team really figures there. I think Elvis, his numbers might be a decent fit, but I kind of like Elvis where he is toward the bottom of the lineup, and you can sustain some offense that way. And I'd kind of like to see him kept where he is and maybe a mixed Profar and DeShields in at the top and see if that, clicks a little bit.
So, one of the biggest issues for the Rangers has been who else is going to pitch in this rotation? Obviously, you feel good about Cole and you. And then beyond that, you're just not sure. You got some question marks. You got some guys who have been banged up, obviously, with Colby and Derek. Martin Perez has looked much better of late, going to that changeup a little more often and has looked a little bit better. So, that said, these guys have to figure out a way to get deeper into games so you can protect that bullpen. The bullpen is phenomenal. Obviously, you got a lot of nice pieces down there, but it's only going to work if they're not burned up. And the only way they don't get burned up is if these starting pitchers go deeper into games. Or is that going to be less of an issue once we get to these September call-ups? Is it just a matter of making it to that point?
No, I don't think so, because unless you've opened up an 11-game lead or something going into September, you're still playing to win. You're not gonna throw Jose Leclerc into the sixth inning of a two-run game. As long as you still need to win ball games. So the depth will be helpful in games where you're winning by seven or losing by six or something like that, or you're in the 13th inning. Then the depth helps a lot because you can keep your key pieces of the bullpen fresh and not have to use them in games where they really need not be used. But they're gonna rely on the key guys all the way down the stretch until the games are not as meaningful, hopefully. As far as starters getting deeper into games, I think Perez's last start is a really good example of where Jonathan Lucroy can help a great deal in that respect. We know what we're going to get out of Hamels. We know what we're going to get out of Darvish. I think we've even seen a little uptick with Darvish since Lucroy arrived. I'm not sure that you chalk that up to the catcher. I think Darvish is just finally getting back into rhythm. But as far as the rest of the rotation, in Perez's last start, you mentioned the changeup. It was phenomenal. It's the pitch that got him to the big leagues. He had lost his feel for it and his confidence in it for the last couple of years, really. And we've seen a guy that has shown signs of being a solid three, and then one every three starts, he just doesn't have it, and you can see it kind of unravel. Well, in this last start, I think whether it was before the game or during the game, maybe even between innings, Lucroy just gave Perez so much confidence in that pitch. He threw it more than he has any time this year by far. And he was in command all night. And on top of the confidence in the repertoire, he ended up throwing 91 pitches in seven innings. That's 13 an inning. And that's a good number for Hamels or Darvish. I mean, 13 per inning gets you into the seventh, eighth, even ninth inning sometimes. But with a guy like Perez, who has had just way too many eight-pitch at-bats this season because he's been had this tendency to nibble. Even when he's ahead in the count, he's like, you know, trying to be too fine around the edges and not trusting his stuff. When you see him with the confidence to throw pitches out of the zone because they're effective, and that's the pitch that the catcher's calling, and, you know, that makes his fastball even more effective because hitters are off balance. And you can be, you know, you can be more efficient by just throwing more strikes and letting your defense take care of business. And if Perez is getting there mentally, whether that's because Lucroy is helping or not, or if it's just Perez maturing, that's a huge step. It makes me fired up to see what happens when Holland comes back, to see if he's a changed pitcher in terms of, you know, trusting his stuff and not nibbling here and there, because Lucroy gives him a little bit more confidence in his really good stuff. You know, maybe this pitching staff gets better piece by piece just because they're maturing a little bit and they have a catcher who's now coming in from the outside and sort of giving them a little bit of a new message in terms of, you know, hey, this is how we're going to game plan these other guys, and you just need to trust your stuff a little more.
Boy, life is really good when your baseball team has an elite catcher. I mean, a two-way player, a guy with just an amazing bat, but in addition, just a guy who's great with the pitchers, great controlling the run game, great at framing. It's a different game altogether, and I was comparing this to, you know, life on a basketball team when you get a really good point guard. Like, for instance, when Jason Kidd came to the Mavericks, you know, you almost don't realize what it's like to have a guy like that until you get one. You're like, oh, my God, oh yeah, that's okay. This is where I'm supposed to catch the ball for an easy layup all the time. But Lucroy has just been phenomenal, and it can't be a coincidence that so many of these teams that have won the World Series have had, you know, an alpha male lead dog elite catcher.
Well, and I think your point guard example is a good one. It's a good analogy because, you know, that those are two positions where you're talking about sort of leaders between the lines, right? So, you know, your point guard sort of makes everybody a little better by getting them into position and then feeding them the ball where they like it. And when you don't have that point guard, then the play is not as efficient. Same with a catcher. You know, the catcher's job is to get the pitcher to throw his best pitches and to believe in those pitches and know that he can bury a curveball in the dirt with a man on third and two strikes and two outs because he knows that catcher is going to block it. It's sort of a similar deal where you've got someone who's, you know, on the court or on the field that's getting his teammates, putting them in a better position to win. So I think that's a good analogy, and you're right. It's been a long time since we've had that guy. I mean, we've had catchers that have gotten us to the World Series. You know, Mike Napoli was fantastic. Even defensively, Mike Napoli was more than passable here behind the plate. You know, Benji Molina was terrific defensively, didn't do as much with the bat. Even guys like Matt Traynor. I mean, we've had guys here, but in terms of the complete package, not just the physical demands of the job that you talked about, the framing, the blocking, the throwing, offering something with the bat. Lucroy has that other thing that the great catchers have, and that is he runs the game. And it's not a coincidence that the World Series teams the last decade have had a whole lot of names like Buster Posey and Yadier Molina and Salvador Perez, and going back to Jorge Posada. Those guys are key, and Texas has one in place now this year, next year, hopefully beyond.
All right, I'm going to go that direction with you, and I'm going to put you on the spot because we spent a lot of time talking about the value of Ian Desmond, and I would dare say he's become an elite defensive center fielder. I mean, I feel the Rangers are more than adequately protected in center field with Ian Desmond, in addition to which, you know, a guy who's, although he's been slumping of late, you know, putting up fantastic numbers as well offensively. So, you know, Ian Desmond's going to be a free agent. Lucroy still has one more year, but let's say you have to decide right now, and you can either get a 4-year extension with Lucroy after this year, so you'll have him for 5 years, or Ian Desmond for 5 years. Both guys right about the same age, you know, into their 30s now, but you're going to have to commit long-term to keep them. Which one of those guys would you commit to for the next 5 years, Lucroy the year he's already under, plus four, or Ian Desmond plus five?
Well, my vote is to make a very deep playoff run and put millions of extra dollars in the ownership's coffers because of that and spend it on both of them. But if that's not an option in this multiple choice question, I think I've got to take Lucroy. A couple reasons. Number one, I think Desmond is going to command more money on the open market just because of the bigger offensive numbers. You know, as we sit here right now, he's in a slump that looks a whole lot like the one that he started the season with. And, you know, in between, he had a couple months where he looked like an MVP candidate. He's going to get A lot of play on the open market this winter, and I would love for him to end up back in Texas for all kinds of reasons. But I think Lucroy will command a little less just because of the type of market that pit catchers have compared to really dynamic offensive players who play up the middle. Number two, I think even though center field is it's a difficult position to nail down, and it's not like first base or left field where you've got options every winter to try to fill the spot. Catcher's harder. Catcher's harder to address. And if you've got one that's in the top 10 and maybe even top 5 in baseball at an age where he's still theoretically in his prime, I think you have to do everything you can to lock that guy up. I mean, we got to remember, Ian Desmond is playing elite center field, but he wasn't even an outfielder at this time last year, which is not to say you can just go find some shortstop and turn him into a plus center fielder. But the point is that there are probably more alternatives out there in terms of finding your next center fielder long term, whether it's internally now or through trades or free agency, than it is trying to find that franchise catcher. So if I've got to choose between the two, love Desmond a ton, but I love Lucroy even more. And I think that he makes this team better than any catcher that the club has had since Bud Rodriguez.
Wow. Okay. Saw an article in the paper over the weekend by Jerry Fraley in the Dallas Morning News, and he was pointing out that Elvis and Rugi up the middle have the second most errors in Major League Baseball. And then he pulled out some other things. The Bill James, run save number, they were negative 12, second worst in the league. Then you look at Baseball Reference, Elvis, they have him as the 18th best shortstop, and Rugi is the 14th best second baseman. Fangraphs had Elvis 21, Rugi 20th. So this becomes one of those saber metrics versus eyeballs, the watch the damn game theory. So I just want to ask you, do you feel like the Rangers' defense up the middle has been, 18th best in the league, or do you feel like they're still really, really solid up the middle defensively in terms of shortstop and second base?
I'd say somewhere between those two extremes. I don't think they've been really good up the middle, but I don't think it's because they don't have a really good shortstop and a really good second baseman. I just think the two of them have not had their best seasons defensively. I'll say that about Elvis. Odor hasn't yet had his very good defensive season, and he will. He's got every tool you need at second base. He just hasn't matured to the point where he makes fewer mistakes. With Elvis, it seems to me, and I've watched most of the games this year, that his errors seem almost always to be focus related. He will boot a ball that, Class A shortstops make every time, or he will airmail a throw like he did in the last week or so, where he had all day long, and he just, you could tell before he let go of the ball that he didn't tap the ball in the glove. He looked a little uncomfortable, and then the ball ends up in the third row. It seems like it's almost not a lack of attention, but it just seems like he loses his focus on some plays, and they turn into errors. There just haven't been a whole lot of plays where a ball just eats him up, because he didn't get the glove down, or he, on a throw to a pivot to second base, he's just a little bit off the bag. When he's got to make a quick play, he makes it. But sometimes when the play looks fairly routine, he ends up, for whatever reason, taking a step back instead of a step forward, and then he's got to rush a throw and it doesn't get there in time, or something like that, where it just seems like it's a focus deal. And I feel like that, obviously that has to be addressed. That's not an excuse. But like I said about Odor, there's not a play that a shortstop needs to make that Elvis Andrus can't make. And he's not a butcher at shortstop. He just sometimes doesn't seem as locked in as he needs to be. I don't think he's the 18th best defensive shortstop in baseball. That seems crazy to me. In fact, it's kind of surprising me that he's ranked lower at short than Odor is at second. I'm happy going forward as shortstop with Elvis Andrus as long as it fits with the team's payroll and structure. I'm very confident with him at six.
All right, let's go. Let's wrap this up with some positivity. Let's fill in the blank here. Rangers fans should not be overly concerned about the Mariners because of blank.
Because they're insanely hot right now, and those things cycle, and they're not going to stay this hot. They're not deep enough in the rotation to keep playing baseball like this. They probably aren't as bad as they were for the stretch leading up to this, where they seemed like they were falling out of the race. They'll find their middle ground, and they may have a better shot than Houston to make it you know, make a case for a playoff spot as we get into the mid and late September. But I don't want to say I'm not worried about them. This race is not over. But I do think that they're not going to sustain the run that they're on right now, where they're beating everybody every night and sometimes by a lot.
All right. He's Jamie Newberg. I'm Ben Rogers. Thanks to everyone who's listened to this. If you enjoy the Spitballing podcast, please get out there and share the links with your friends. Let them know we're out here. For Jamie Newberg, I'm Ben Rogers. Until next time, happy baseball, everybody.